Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is David Ray Griffin. Griffin is a professor of philosophy of religion and theology emeritus at Claremont School of Theology and Claremont Graduate University in Claremont, California, where he remains the co-director of the Center for Process Studies. Professor Griffin is one of the most respected leaders of the 9/11 truth movement and has written a half dozen books questioning the official story behind the 9/11 attacks, including his groundbreaking 2004 work, The New Pearl Harbor, Disturbing Questions About the Bush Administration and 9/11, and the 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. And this month, he will release a new follow-up to his 2004 work. It's called The New Pearl Harbor Revisited, 9/11, The Cover-Up and the Exposé, published by Interlink Books. I'm speaking to David Ray Griffin by phone from his home in California. Welcome to the show, David Ray Griffin. Thank you so much for joining us. Now you've written six books questioning the official 9/11 story, and you've said that the 9/11 Commission report that came out in July 2004 didn't lessen your suspicions about 9/11 cover-up, but confirmed them. So to tell us a little bit about that.
Well, as people in the movement know, at that time there was great debate within the movement whether the 9/11 Commission was a genuine commission to look at the evidence, or whether it really was just set up to cover it up. And I had an open mind at that time, but it didn't last long after seeing the 9/11 Commission. For one thing, I saw in the very first pages that even though some of the hijackers had clearly, you know, the alleged hijackers were still alive after 9/11. I mean, these were mainstream reports, the BBC and the British Telegraph and so on. The 9/11 Commission just reported these same 19 guys as if there was no question whatsoever that they were involved in the flight. So you could see from the very beginning that there was going to be no effort to get at the truth of things.
And what you have a new book coming out, a follow-up to your definitive book, The New Pearl Harbor. Well, what new information have you found? And let's talk about specific issues, like the failure to intercept the planes and so on.
Yeah, there are so many things that happened since the New Pearl Harbor came out at the very end of at the very beginning of 2004, because in the meantime, the 9/11 Commission report did appear in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
The summer of 2004. Then NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, put out its report on the Twin Towers in 2005. They delayed the report on Building 7 until just last week. They kept delaying it, and so that has now come out. And then the biggest thing that's happened within the 9/11 truth movement is the enormous growth of the number of intellectuals and professionals who have joined the movement, so that whereas at one time they, you know, the defenders of the official theory would ridicule the movement by saying, you know, it's a bunch of kids on the internet. And then when I joined the movement, it was a bunch of kids and an aging theologian.
And they also keep saying that there's nobody with scientific experience, correct?
That's what they were claiming. But then we got, you know, physicist Stephen Jones started writing and speaking, and they said, well, you know, that buildings, that's really for engineers and architects, not physicists. They don't know about buildings. So now, recently, Richard Gage formed Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and within a year he had over 400 people, licensed architects and engineers, willing to put their name on the line, even though that could cost them work, to say the official story doesn't make sense. And also we've now got veterans for 9/11 Truth, pilots for 9/11 Truth, And most recently, firefighters for 9/11 Truth, and that's beyond scholars for 9/11 Truth and scholars and for 9/11 Truth and Justice. So you have all these organizations of intellectuals and professionals. So we've got thousands of people. You can go on Patriots Question 9/11 and see them. who are questioning the official story, and yet the mainstream press doesn't change its view and just dismisses all of these people. Some of them, you know, former CIA officials like Ray McGovern and Bill Christensen, many of them former military officers from around the world besides the United States and Canada. And they just, you know, put them all in this big lump. Well, they're conspiracy theorists, you know, as if they had made up their mind in advance and went looking for, you know, excuses not to believe the official story. Most of these people didn't join the movement till 2005, 2006, 2007. So they were people like myself who believed the official story for a long time. It wasn't that we went looking for something to find. We had to be convinced by the evidence, and now just, I mean, it's the growth of the movement is phenomenal. So in the New Pearl Harbor, then, New Pearl Harbor Revisited, I'm able to report a number of these people and show what a difference it has made, because with the NIST report, you now have a group of scholars led by Stephen Jones and chemist Kevin Ryan and architect Richard Gage writing joint letters to NIST and saying, you know, what you say just doesn't stand up to the evidence, and what about this? So, for example...
Yeah, tell us some of the evidence that you're questioning.
Yeah. Well, for example, NIST would not report that there were literally hundreds of people who reported explosions in the Twin Towers. There were 118 members of the Fire Department of New York who gave these oral testimonies. That was about 118 out of 503, so about a quarter of them. They weren't asked in advance. They just all volunteered this independently. So that was pretty remarkable. And NIST didn't mention these, so Jones and the others said, well, you know, and quoted a bunch of these statements, said, why did you, you know, you claimed you didn't find a shred of evidence that would support the idea of controlled demolition. Why did you ignore all these testimonies? And NIST wrote back lamely and said, well, we think the preponderance of the testimonies do not support controlled demolition. And so what did they mean? You needed 100% or 51% of the people? Another example, they didn't mention the melted steel in their first report. Then when they got so many letters about this, they put out a frequently asked questions fact sheet, and they said, well, you know, the fire clearly couldn't have melted the steel. Well, you know, that's what the 9/11 Truth Movement was saying. Fire doesn't come within 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit of the temperature needed to melt steel. So why was there so much melted steel?
And you're talking about the steel columns that were inside the Twin Towers, correct?
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And an enormous amount, you know, like one firefighter said who went down below, he said it was just a river of molten metal down there. So it wasn't a tiny little bit. It was a lot. And NIST first, you know, tried to deny this. There's a video I report of this guy, John Gross, who was one of them. And when he was giving a presentation and somebody asked him about the molten steel, he just said, well, I just reject your premise that there was any molten steel. But in its report then, NIST said, well, if there was some molten steel, the most plausible explanation for this would be that being underground and protected from the air, it would have gotten so hot, it would have melted the steel. Well, if you remember your seventh grade physics and chemistry, you know that a hydrocarbon fire needs oxygen to burn. Mm-hmm. And yet they were claiming that because it was protected from the air, it would have gotten over 1,000 degrees hotter than the hottest forest fire ever. So, and then they were asked, well, what about, did you check for thermite? And they said, no, you know, in the dust. And they said, no, we didn't check for it. Well, one female reporter got curious about this, and she said, well, you know, I reject these conspiracy theorists, but I find it kind of strange that you didn't look for the thermite. Why didn't you?
And what does that mean, looking for thermite?
Oh, thermite, of course, is an explosive. It's a common method for cutting steel. In fact, the common saying is that thermite cuts through steel like a hot knife cuts through butter. And Stephen Jones has found residue of thermite in World Trade Center dust that various people have sent him. So that's what I mean, looking for the residue of thermite, looking for the signature, as they say. And this Michael Newman, who's the spokesman for NIST, said, well, there's no use looking for something that isn't there. And she got very puzzled and said, well, how'd you know it wasn't there if you didn't look for it? And he said, look, we're not going to waste the taxpayers' money looking for something that isn't there.
That's remarkable the way they've dismissed so much of this. Now, talk to us about Building 7, because that report did just come out about it, the building that collapsed hours after the Twin Towers.
Yeah, it's just, as somebody wrote to me, you know, they just showed contempt for the public with this because they didn't even try to make it a plausible account. They just said, well, you know, so what that if fire has never brought a steel frame building down before? It did this time. And that's the essence of the report. If you look at the details, you find they, you know, the Building 7, whereas the Twin Towers had 287 steel columns that, in order to come down vertically, would have all had to fail simultaneously. Building 7 only had 81. And to bring down a building vertically, all 81 of those would have had to fail exactly at the same time, on all the floors at the same time. And that's what controlled demolition does. You plant these explosives, and then you put them, you know, on a computer, and they go off in a certain order, and that's how you bring the building straight down so it doesn't damage other buildings. And they're claiming that, well, the fire in there, that there was one of those columns that was really crucial, and all the other 81 depended on it, as if anybody would have built a building like that. You know, they build them with enormous redundancy. But that's what they claim. And then they claim that when that column failed, it caused all the others to fail. And so, therefore, you had this building come down at free fall speed, you know, under 7 seconds, and vertically, straight down, all those other 80 columns had to fail, and fail in many places, you know, because you didn't have these enormous 47-story steel beams lying on the street there. No, they came down in pieces, so they all had to somehow break in pieces simultaneously. And then, as I predicted in the New Pearl Harbor Revisited, they simply ignored the evidence that they knew they couldn't deal with. So, again, they don't mention explosions, and many people have reported explosions going off. They don't discuss the melted steel and so on. To give an example of how they lied, Michael Hess was a good friend of Giuliani's, still is, I assume. He was the corporation counsel for the city of New York. He and another fellow from the city, Barry Jennings, went up into Building 7 because Giuliani's bunker was there, which was supposed to be, you know, where they would ride out any terrorist attack. They went up to see Giuliani, and they got there right after the first strike. So they got there around 9 o'clock that morning. This emergency command center was already empty. They asked what they should do by making a telephone call. They were told they should get out of there immediately. So they started down the stairs because the elevator wouldn't work. They got down to the sixth floor, and there was an enormous explosion. This is about 9:15 in the morning, you know, and Building 7 doesn't go down until 5:20 in the afternoon. So it looks like it was supposed to go down in the morning. Anyway, this enormous explosion blew the floor out from under them, and they just barely held on to a pole, were able to get back up, climb up to the eighth floor, break a window, and notify people that they were up there, and firefighters started to come and get them. But then pretty soon Building 2, the South Tower, collapsed. The firefighters had to run away. They came back, and then the North Tower collapsed. They had to run away. They didn't finally get rescued until around 11, got out of there. And then Michael Hess was giving an interview a half mile away by 11:34 or so. And the 9/11 Commission distorts this account, the NIST report. They say that that when they thought they felt an explosion in their own building, in Building 7, at 9:15, that was really the South Tower coming down at 9:59. In other words, it took them 45 minutes to get down, 17 flights of stairs. And then what they thought was that was the North Tower, that what caused the elevator not to work was the South Tower coming down. And then they got down to the sixth floor, and that was a – so they're claiming that this didn't happen till 10:28, and then Michael Hess and Jennings had said they were in there for about an hour and a half. And so the NIST says, well, they weren't rescued until after noon, about 12:10. Well, you know that's a lie because we've got a recording of Hess giving an interview long before that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is their way of denying that there really was an explosion in Building 7, even though Giuliani's friend, Michael Hess, said there was.
Now, David Ray Griffin, I know the 9/11 Truth Movement has question the story of how these towers came down, but do you have any theories about who did this? Because, of course, the official story says Osama bin Laden and members of Al-Qaeda. Do you, members of the 9/11 Truth Movement, have any theories about who did do this?
Yeah, well, all you can say is that it wasn't somebody, it wasn't foreign terrorists, because you would have to be able to get in the buildings to plant the explosives. Secondly, you would have to be very expert, as you can read on implosion.com. An implosion where you make the building come straight down so it doesn't damage other buildings. Think what had happened if those 110-story twin towers had fallen over sideways. That's the easy way to bring a building down.
Mm-hmm.
You would have had enormous destruction, dozens or hundreds of buildings, tens of thousands of people killed. You would have had to have a real investigation. So the buildings came straight down. Would have Osama bin Laden had the expertise to do this? And even if he had had the expertise, would he have had the courtesy to have the buildings come straight down? So he didn't have the expertise or the courtesy, or he couldn't have gotten access to the building. So what you can say is it had to be an inside job. And then if you ask, well, why would someone let people in there to bring the buildings down, it helps to know maybe that one of the principals for a company that was in charge of security, called Securicom, for the World Trade Center, happened to be named Marvin Bush.
Ah, George Bush's brother.
That's right. And the CEO was Wirt Walker III, a cousin. So these are things the mainstream press never tells you. They just say, oh, you conspiracy theorists.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Professor David Ray Griffin. Griffin is one of the most respected leaders of the 9/11 Truth Movement and has written several books on this issue. Now, I want to talk about the Pentagon. You talk about the lack of debris, even though a plane was supposed to have gone right into the Pentagon. Let's talk about that issue.
Yes, I've got a lot more about that in the New Pearl Harbor Revisited, because a lot more evidence has come forth because of books that have been published about the Pentagon. And even though they support the official story, they give lots of witness testimony that undermines the official story. So I quote many medical people and employees in the Pentagon who say they went to what they thought was the crash site, and there was no plane there. And they would say things like, well, you'd think you'd see something. You should see fuselage. You should see engines, these steel engines. You should see wings outside. So people outside said there's no debris other than, as Jamie McIntyre from CNN said, there are just pieces small enough you can pick up in your hand. So it looks like some kind of aircraft did crash there, but it was some kind of small thing that just blew to smithereens when it hit the wall.
And what is the what did the 9/11 Commission say about this issue?
It didn't say anything. It didn't say anything about the. It didn't even mention Building 7. And with regard to the Pentagon, it just said, "Well, Flight 77 hit the Pentagon." Gave absolutely no evidence. And when you go through and see, you know, there's no physical evidence. There's no. The only testimonial evidence they have is about 30 people who claim they saw an airliner. Some of them said an American airliner coming towards the Pentagon. Some of them said it hit the Pentagon. But when you look at their testimony, first of all, a good number of them work for USA Today or some other Gannett organization, which is totally supportive of the, you know, the Pentagon's point of view. Many of them give mutually contradictory stories. Many of them give reports that are you know, contradicted by the physical evidence. So several of them said, "Oh well, the plane." Hit the lawn, its wing hit the lawn before it hit the Pentagon. Well, you can look at the photographs. There are no scars on the Pentagon lawn. There is no sign that anything like a giant airliner going 400, 500 miles an hour hit the Pentagon lawn.
Yeah, I've seen those pictures. That is a puzzling interpretation. What is your theory about what did happen?
You know, it is really puzzling. What does seem clear is, well, I mean, what is clear is the official story is false. As to what really happened, there is evidence that I didn't report before that has come forward that bombs were going off inside the Pentagon. And the only question now seems to be, were these bombs and some sort of aircraft coordinated to occur at about the same time? But like April Gallup, I quote a long interview with her, and she was almost killed. And she, with her two-month-old baby, was in there, and the plane came very close to where she was working. She was injured, but was able to get out of there. And she said, "I went right through the path where they said the plane hit." She didn't know at the time that a plane allegedly hit. She just thought bombs went off. It was not till she got to the hospital that these people from the Pentagon came and told her a plane had hit. And she says, "Well, I think it was just a bomb." And they kept insisting, "No, it was a plane. It was American Flight 77," and so on. But she says, "You know, I walked right through there, and you would think I would have seen something."
Mm-hmm.
And at first, she was the only one saying that. And now, as I report, there were many, many people in the Pentagon who were saying essentially the same thing.
Now, what is your wish from all this information? You want them to open a real investigation. Is that correct?
Well, sure. And then, you know, what would be the purpose of a real investigation? Some people say, well, you know, we got to get the true perpetrators and get them punished. For me, and surely they should be, but for me the main thing is to get the policies and the attitudes reversed. When I speak of attitudes, I mean this idea, if you heard the Republican convention talk about the radical evil of Muslim terrorism. And Muslims around the world have become second-class citizens. They're guilty before, you know, until proven innocent, because
mm-hmm.
now they belong to an inherently violent religion because of 9/11. So one thing would be to remove that stain from a billion of our fellow citizens that somehow Islam was responsible for 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, to reverse the policies. So, you know, Obama is saying, well, we need to get out of Iraq so that we can devote those resources and troops to go after the people who really attacked us on 9/11, who are in Afghanistan. Well, as I report, there's no evidence. The FBI even says we have no hard evidence that bin Laden is responsible for 9/11. If you go on the FBI's most wanted page on Osama bin Laden, you'll see he is not listed as wanted for 9/11.
And so your theory is that it was somebody inside the Bush administration or the Bush administration. Is that correct?
Sure. It had to be within the Bush administration, with Cheney at the very center of it, and I give lots of reasons for saying Cheney was at the center of things, and the Pentagon. Of course, Cheney used to be Secretary of Defense, so mm-hmm. he knows all about how the Pentagon works, and he and Rumsfeld have a long time been best friends, you know. So Rumsfeld, and in terms of the operation, you have to say Cheney and Rumsfeld were at the center of things.
Mm-hmm. And who do you see being able to investigate this with any kind of authority that we wouldn't be going through the same old cycle of what you call as, hiding the truth? Would it have to be the United Nations investigating or what?
You could have a UN investigation. In fact, a fellow has just written a movie script based on my writings, in which that's the imaginary scenario, that there is a UN investigation. Another possibility would be an investigation carried out by a friendly country, such as Canada or some Western European country, such as Italy. There's a lot of movement in Italy now on the 9/11 truth movement, with several of its leading politicians saying, of course, 9/11 was an inside job. There's a member of the European Parliament named Chiesa, former prime minister and president of Italy, has said, of course, it was an inside job. Also, Norway might be a possibility. And so there are many countries that could do it, or it could be an all-European or an all-Western European commission. But another possibility would be if we would ever get a genuine Justice Department back and assign a special prosecutor. That would be the best way within the United States, because once you have a special prosecutor, you can subpoena people, put them under oath, and as we learned with the Libby affair, people will talk to save mm-hmm. their own skins.
Mm-hmm. David Ray Griffin, we only have about a minute left. I know there's a Zogby poll that came out in 2006 that said as many as 42% of the people in this country believe there is a cover-up. Now, how can people pursue this if they want to? Is there contact information that you can give?
Yeah, in my books, if you look in the notes in the back, you'll find contact information. One website to go to, the kind of most generic website, is just called 911truth.org. That's 911 without a slash, 911truth.org. And that will get you connected to the other things. The other one would be 911 Blogger to keep up on very recent events.
Okay, well, Professor David Ray Griffin, thank you so much for joining us. And I do hope this issue finds some kind of conclusion at some point.
Okay, Tish, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes in Corning, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.